You're with John Cleary on Sunday Night.
Hi there, good to have you with us. Well, a few weeks ago, the Catholic Bishop of Toowoomba, Bill Morris, was effectively sacked by the Vatican. You may recall that Bishop Bill Morris spent some time with us on Sunday night explaining how he felt about his position. It was clear then that the events distressed many, and in fact they made international news. Well, now the Australian bishops are preparing to visit Rome for consultations. Those consultations will take place in October. The last time, they were lectured about Australian weaknesses. Well, just a couple of days ago, on Friday, the recently formed organisation Catholics for Renewal released a call for Australian Catholics to become signatories to an open letter to the Pope and the Bishops of Australia as they prepare for their Roman pilgrimage in October. Well, given the events of the past few months, we thought that tonight, on Sunday night, we should talk with Australian Catholics about their fears for the Church and their hopes for the future. In our second hour, we'll spread the net a little wider when Tom Roberts, an editor with the National Catholic Reporter in the United States, joins us to look at the issues facing the Church and society in the United States, maybe pick up on a few similarities and differences. We'll also be talking with the Anglican Archbishop of Melbourne, Philip Fryer, about his comments during the week regarding the government's Indigenous intervention strategy in the light of NAIDOC week this past week. Then our regular fun and games, including the Inquisition, Noel with a Good Life, some music, and the chat room, where Dr. Angela McCarthy will be doing double service this evening as she joins us for our first hour conversation, and it sticks around to pick up your questions much later in the chat room. But right now, a song, and here's a little taste for those with memories. Do you remember Joe South? Games people play, without any hint of irony, of course, in our discussion this evening. This week, well, on Friday, precisely, a group called Catholics for Renewal, a community group of Catholics, centred in Melbourne, but more broadly based, claim to have consulted widely in preparing an open letter to the Pope and the Australian bishops about concerns that they share with many other Catholics. The letter outlines those concerns and proposes a way forward. The letter calls specifically for two first steps, namely that each diocesan bishop convene a synod in his diocese to discuss how the local church might be a more authentic witness in the 21st century, and that Pope Benedict allow a return to a more accountable and consultative process for the appointment of bishops, giving both priests and people a real voice, as was church practice in earlier centuries. Well, the group has sent the letter to parishes across the country, and the open letter can also be read and signed online. Well, to discuss the open letter and the impending visit by Australian bishops to Rome in October, we're joined this evening by Peter Johnson, one of those who helped launch the organisation Catholics for Renewal, also Father Hal Ranger of the National Council of Priests of Australia. Hal Ranger is co-editor of their journal, SWAG, and a former president of the National Council of Priests, and also a regular guest on the program, Dr. Angela McCarthy, lecturer in theology at the School of Philosophy and Theology at Notre Dame University in Perth. Welcome to you all. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good evening. Thanks, John. Thank you.
Peter Johnson, let me come to you first. Just tell us about how Catholics for Renewal came together and why you felt now is an appropriate time to voice the concerns you have.
I guess, John, primarily it was because of the Bishop's visit to Rome in October that we felt that now was an appropriate time. All of us, as we found many Catholics, have been feeling concern about the state of the Church for some time. And when we became aware of this, a few of us got together and we worked through a process of testing our thinking with a wide range of Catholics in preparing a letter to the Australian bishops and to the Pope, asking the Australian bishops to take it to Rome. It just so happened that the termination of Bishop Morris occurred shortly before that drafting process was completed.
But that process was already underway, was it, when the events
Oh, our process was well underway, yes. We didn't know anything about the Bishop Morris business, but it seemed to be an unfortunate but excellent illustration of precisely the sorts of things we were concerned about in the Church. About a lack of collegiality and subsidiarity in the way the Church takes decisions. The fact that the Church, for this sort of reason, no longer inspires many Catholics, and that's led to many Catholics leaving the Church. Many of our children no longer practice Catholicism. Good people, but they see little that inspires them in the Catholic Church. And the Church is seen to have failed in many matters essentially of justice.
You've taken a pretty bold step. You've not only called on the Catholic bishops to actually take these concerns to Rome when they visit in October, but you've also suggested that they begin to implement a series of diocesan synods to actually express the voice of the faithful or give an opportunity for the faithful to have a say. Now, one could get into the details of whether that means the bottom-up ruling or the bottom-up giving advice. But nevertheless, actually having locally based synods would be seen by some as a pretty revolutionary step. You're suggesting that, in fact, it's a return to order, not a departure from order.
Oh, indeed, John. There's nothing revolutionary about diocesan synods, as you say. It'd be very much a return to order, and there is nothing rebellious or mutinous about diocesan synods. It's very much in keeping with a principle that's been espoused over many years, particularly by Pius XI in the Church, known as subsidiarity, which essentially it's a good principle of governance. Essentially, it says that decisions shouldn't be taken at a higher level than they need to be, that as far as possible, people should, to the extent appropriate, people should be involved in decision-making. And indeed, the Council of Trent required a diocesan synod to be held once a year. During the 177 years since the establishment of the Church in Australia, on our count, there's only been six dioceses that have held a total of 11 synods, with only seven since Vatican II. So I gather there is a synod in progress in Broken Bay at present. So this is something that's been lost in the proper governance of the Church, in the traditional governance of the Church, and it's a way of involving people and ensuring, in fact, that the centre of the Church is properly informed by what the people of the Church face on a daily basis.
And before I bring Hal Ranger and Angela into the conversation, just one other observation, and this regards the actual visit by the Australian bishops to Rome and your hope that they would carry some view to Rome with them. Many will recall a now famous or infamous, depending on how you interpret it, visit by the Australian bishops to Rome, I guess almost getting on for 10 years ago now, when rather than have the opportunity to express their views, most reporting coming out of that event suggested that the bishops were lectured to about Australian weaknesses and sent on their way with something of a flea in their ear.
Oh, indeed, John, and there's no secret about what they were told. The document that came out of that is a public document on the public record, and I've taken the trouble in recent times developing a further interest in what lies behind some of these decisions to read that document, and I've got to say it shows little understanding or concern for what the people of the Church think. It's very much a top-down document, certainly little in the way of collegiality about it, and I think it's a quite fair call to say that essentially the Australian bishops were told what to do and given very little opportunity to comment on it.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. John Cleary with you. Around Australia, we're talking about Catholics for Renewal, a call for Catholic lay involvement, diocesan synods in the church, and concerns that Rome isn't listening locally. What do you think? 1-300-800-222 is the number to ring. If you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, give us a ring now. In other states, you can give us a ring sometime in the next 15 minutes or so. I'll give you the number again. I'd like to bring into the conversation now Father Hal Ranger. Hal Ranger is in the Diocese of Toowoomba, where Bishop Bill Morris recently was removed from his position, or took early retirement, depending on your interpretation. But Father Hal Ranger is also the editor of the National Council of Priests magazine, SWAG, and a former president of the National Council of Priests. Father Hal Ranger, to what extent is the Diocese of Toowoomba still in a bit of shock and grief over the Bill Morris affair?
Well, John, a few comments in response to that. There's still a lot of disappointment, shock, questioning. A common question that people asked, even this morning after Masses at the Cathedral, what exactly did Bishop Morris do wrong? And it's very difficult to uncover that.
This is wrong either theologically or in terms of church order.
Yeah, because our experience, the vast majority of us, from Toowoomba in the east right out to Windora, Birdsville, all that in the far, far west, he was a Christ-like person in the way he met people where they were at in their daily struggles and joys and challenges, and brought hope, forgiveness, understanding, reassurance to them. So the overwhelming experience of the people was that this was an ideal Christ-like leader. But responding to your question, in other ways, there's that disappointment. But then Bishop Brian Finnegan, who's an auxiliary in Brisbane, he's got a heavy load in Brisbane as it is, and is unable to be present physically here very much, although he made a quick visit by plane today, this very day, to Charleville, but he's due back in Brisbane tomorrow. So he's pretty limited, but he's genuine in trying to walk with us in what is for him a very difficult situation, because his time is limited.
There's some irony in that, of course. In that one of the concerns was central to Bishop Bill Morris was the shortage of priests and the way to deal with it.
Sure. And that remains. What is very heartwarming, really, is that the structures that over the years have been put in place with the blessing and the leadership of Bill Morris, while they officially cease to exist in canon law because they depend upon the affirmation of a bishop, and we don't have one strictly, but all the important ones have continued to be in place, at least informally, and that's a credit to Bill, and it maintains some spirit and sense of mutual support. So in some ways, life goes on as it was going on, and yeah, there's a lot of positives about it. At a parish community level, of course, and I don't think it's very different anywhere in the world, life does go on. The energy, there's some hurt. Some people walk away. Others renew their commitment. So that life goes on at the parish level, and in spite of the what's happened at the leadership level.
Well, turning
the other thing to say is that there's a bit of concern and apprehension about who might be the new bishop. Yeah.
Well, turning to the wider concerns, perhaps now that maybe people in the diocese feel, and certainly can be expressed through the National Council of Priests, the sorts of things that Peter Johnson is expressing through Catholics for Renewal and their statement, would there be some resonance with the folk in Toowoomba with regard to the direction that the Catholics for Renewal are suggesting we need to go?
Well, it's early days, and the letter that Peter's referring to was only released on Friday, but at a personal level, I was very encouraged and excited by that initiative, and everything in that letter I would want to support and endorse personally, and my gut feeling would be that that would be generally the vast majority of the priests and people of this diocese would react similarly, I think.
The National Council of Priests have been quite willing to express themselves, given the opportunities at their meetings over the years. Will there be an opportunity for you and the National Council of Priests to express a view similar to this before the ad limina visit, the visit of the bishops to Rome?
Well, through emails and things like that. The next edition of the swag will actually come out next week, and so it had gone to print before Peter's letter became available. And the next one would be in the spring, which is probably would come out in mid-September. So I guess there's a forum there, because I think the bishops' meeting is scheduled for October. But there's a lot of interaction now on the email, and I think there'd be a whole lot of conversations, if you can call them that, that'd be going on at that level.
Angela, John, I wonder if I could just make a quick comment on that. I think, in fact, your question and the answer is indicative of the problem that we're addressing here, that we're talking about real involvement of the people of the church in the decisions of the church. The bishops are going to Rome on what's called an ad limina visit, the purpose of which is to discuss matters of pastoral concern, what's happening in their diocese. Church tradition would have it that sort of visit should be informed by proper consultation and discussion with the people of the diocese, and particularly the priests, but priests and laity. Yep. And that's where the notion of a regular synod comes in. Hal would find it much easier to have answered that question had there been regular synods.
Yeah, exactly, Peter. That's right.
Angela McCarthy, let me bring you into the conversation here. And just first of all, it's sort of a general feel that you have from your perspective as a lay woman in the church, but somebody who's steeped in the church as a lecturer, a historian, a liturgist. Do you have a sense that there is a degree of disquiet amongst the laity and the priesthood about the direction the church is going and the way things are happening and being handled at the moment?
Two directions there, John. One, from my own personal parish experience, is very positive indeed. And even though we're wrestling a bit with the new translation of the Roman Missal and a few people are bucking at change, that experience is still very good, very fruitful. We have a very large, very active parish. So on that level, I'm certainly functioning within a very vibrant Catholic community that feels confident that in our parish priest we're heard, we feel confident about what we're doing. On the other hand, at the university level, I deal with a large number of young adults, many of whom are from very strong Catholic backgrounds, but are really quite dismayed, or they really want the thought, they really want to think, they really want to be part of the ideas, but they find the majority of them that I teach seem to be, you know, on the edge of saying, well, how does it work? It doesn't seem to be working comfortably, and even many of my own generations, I'm a grandmother, and many of my peers would say, you know, we've now got a generation of pagan grandchildren. That said, laughingly, I suppose, but there is that concern there. There's certainly a move, and some of my colleagues would talk in terms of this is worrying. This is a concern.
Just one of the particulars, Angela, the idea of diocesan synods, does that strike you as remarkable or conventional? Or
it would be absolutely wonderful to have one. We had a grassroots consultation in Perth probably 25 years ago, I think, and it was an exceptional event. People were inspired by it to think that, you know, that there was this conversation happening, tremendous energy that was involved in that. And it would be really wonderful to see something again where the people feel listened to, feel involved. Personally, as a woman, I sometimes feel very frustrated that women aren't heard, that it's a very patriarchal church that still talks down to us, and that can be very difficult to move through with a positive, faith-filled kind of desire.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you. Our guests are Peter Johnson of the recently launched organisation Catholics for Renewal, Father Hal Ranger, co-editor of SWAG, the Journal of the National Council of Priests of Australia, and Dr. Angela McCarthy, lecturer in theology at the School of Philosophy and Theology at Notre Dame University in Western Australia. We're talking about the Church and the people of God. Is there a question about the way the Church is treating both its priest and its people that is directly connected to the falling away of attendance in the Church? How do you feel about your life in the Catholic Church? Are you satisfied with it? Are you happy with the direction it is going in? Do you think the priest has enough authority? Do you think there need to be things like diocesan synods in order that the voice of the people may be heard? 1-300-800-222. 1-300-800-222. Do give us a call right now from wherever you are in Australia, from Cairns to Perth, from Port Hedland to Launceston, or even Hobart. You can give us a call on 1-300-800-222. Noel's standing by to take your calls, and he'll flick you through to the microphone, and we'll see how many we can get on. You can give your comments to Hal Ranger, Angela McCarthy, and Peter Johnson on Sunday Night. Let me open a general topic to you all first that spins out of this. Do you think that there is a feeling, and it's perhaps generated over the last 20 years, where there has been something of a generational change, that you now have a broadly far more educated laity than you had 30 to 50 years ago, and that laity are used to actually, in their workplaces and much else in their life, actually having a participatory role in decision-making? That is, hierarchical structures have generally been flattened in almost every area of life, yet here in the Church, in the Catholic Church in particular, they remain strongly hierarchical, much as they have been for the last 400 or 500 years. Do you think that there's some sense generally that unless some change is made to give people some feeling of engagement and involvement, just being there at Mass is no longer sufficient? It is fine to take care of the spiritual needs, but the needs of the mind also need to be taken into account. Angela first.
Thank you, John. it's difficult as a woman theologian who in my situation I am many times more educated than those that I work with at a parish level. Sometimes that's acceptable, sometimes that's not. Sometimes it's a kind of a fear thing, I think. But I personally find it very frustrating if what I have achieved and what I desire to do for God through education, through faith-filled lifestyle and all of those other things that I try very much to do as a Catholic woman, I find it really hard then when silenced.
Yes, you don't mind. You don't mind. You don't mind a no if you feel you've been listened to and dealt with in a reasonable manner. But to receive no as a blanket no and no reason is, I guess, the problem for many people.
It is. It's difficult. I'm in a particular parish that has a very high level of educated and professional people. Therein lies the tremendous dynamism of many of the activities that happen at our parish level. But still, to be then given no voice, it can be very frustrating. I particularly objected at one stage when kind of told from the pulpit that the PhD I was struggling at the time was useless and didn't mean anything. Now, when I think of that in spiritual terms of, you know, these things we leave behind, surely we go to God. But knowing full well that I was working on this very solidly to offer my services to the Church, you know, that gets a bit off-putting.
Peter Johnson.
John, I think education certainly is relevant in every field, including religion, but personally, I don't really think it's at all relevant to what's happened in the Church. I mean, when I was a young bloke, in 1954, I think, the figure for weekly attendance was 74%. The figures I've got for 2006, it was 13.8%. That's over a pretty long period. When we were doing our validation process before we drafted this letter, we consulted with a large range of people. I was very surprised at some of the people that responded with very thoughtful concerns, people that I might have considered in judging them unfairly beforehand as pretty conservative, but who hadn't chosen to speak up. And there may be an issue of articulation there, I don't know, but it seems very clear to me that people who are leaving the church are leaving whether they're educated or not. They're using common sense in their judging the church, and unfortunately, I've got to say, in many cases, they're making what could be seen to be good decisions. What worries...
is there a common thread, though? Is there any commonality there?
Well, that's a good question. The Australian Bishops' Conference did some work a little while ago and couldn't find any common thread, but I'd suggest there was a common thread there. The sorts of things they talked about was a perception of the irrelevance of the church to life today, misuse of power and authority, problems with the leadership or moral behaviour, loss of a sense of belonging, and being excluded by church rules. And I'm referring there to Peter Wilkinson's paper on Catholic parish ministry in Australia, which was only published a little while ago. But the one thread there seems to me to be leadership within the church, and it seems to me that, I don't want to back away from it. We have identified some very serious issues in the church today that we're prepared to identify. We believe that all of them are simply factual and should be accepted by the church as facts. The dealing with the sex abuse scandal was inadequate, but not only inadequate, it was wrong in that priests were moved and children were endangered in places where the parishioners hadn't been warned about that priest and he should never have been moved there. Now, we might have learnt from that, but that hasn't been exposed as much as the actual sex abuse itself. There was bad decision-making. The Bishop Morris process, Angela mentioned the liturgy. Well, frankly, I think it's a second-order issue, but there was clearly inadequate consultation on that in finding out just what English-speaking peoples preferred in the use of language. I mean, words like consubstantial with the Father aren't exactly the normal idiom of everyday language.
A bit hard to sing too, John, to Peter.
Indeed. the patriarchal attitude to women, there's no doubt about that. In society generally, we've been getting over that for the past 20 or 30 years. It's time the church got over it. Human sexuality, issues like contraception. I mean, the figures on even Catholic priests in Australia, if you look at Chris McGillian's recent book, Our Father, only, 31% of priests agreed with a statement that they observed the 1994 ban on the discussion of ordaining women, which brings up the question of infallibility. Infallibility seems to be being used more as a tool of control, but a not very effective tool judging on those figures. These are the sorts of things that are disenchanting people.
Hal Ranger, this takes us to a question that in many ways is central to the issue, even though it's not addressed by Peter's open letter. That is, it goes to the very nature of the church as an institution and the nature of the priesthood. That is, the church, it seems to be being seen by what's coming out of the Vatican in the last 10 years or so, is that it's beginning to reassert itself in an authoritarian sense, and this is particularly focused on the nature of the priest as being a person set apart, a separate entity, changed in nature when they are ordained, consecrated. Do you think there is that process is leading to a deliberate, intentional separation of the church as an institution from the world, and those maintaining that position see that as a way for the church to reassert itself?
John, can I be just a bit personal here? I was ordained in 1959, that's 52 years ago, into a church where we wore black suits and Roman collars, and it was very much stressed that we were people set apart. There are all sorts of symbols of that, the dress, the altar rails in the church, etc., etc., etc. I was just overwhelmingly excited when out of the blue the Vatican Council was called, and a whole lot of very sensible things opened up as possibilities. I'm staying with that symbol. I haven't worn a black suit and collar since 1972. My understanding of my own vocation as priest is to be one of the people, a servant of the people, offering some gifts and welcoming a whole range of other gifts from women and men who are part of church through baptism and even beyond that. Roughly speaking, up to about 1980, 85, that seemed to be the momentum. And in my understanding and my experience, the last 25 years, not just the last 10, have seen a deliberate winding back of that to restore what was there in the 1950s. And so I'm agreeing very much with you. And that runs counter to what has been happening, as Angela has said and Peter has said, what's happening in the rest of the world, in the rest of society.
Just before we take some calls, let me ask you one other question, and I'll start again with you, Angela. Albeit we agree, or there seems to be general agreement, that there are issues that have to be faced, do you think that the approach being taken by Catholics for renewal is the appropriate one? That is, are the bishops really going to introduce diocesan synods? Are they really going to take notice and push their views on Rome? Is the Pope really going to take notice of a letter from some disgruntled Australian Catholics, as it may be interpreted by some in some quarters? This goes to not the issue itself, but the way the issue is to be effectively dealt with.
Well, reading what Peter and others have put together, I can't see anything in that is confrontational. I can only see that it is an honest and a well-intentioned and a well-thought-out opportunity, in a sense, to speak with the bishops and to have some dialogue, and there can't be anything in that's wrong. I can't possibly know which way the bishops and each bishop will move with it. My hope would be that bishops will listen, and that they will listen to their people, not just a select group of people, but will really listen to the people that they are there to care for, to shepherd, and that they will take those points of view with them. Because that, what an amazing step that would be. Instead of the winding back and the centralising, the Romanising. If you look at history, I mean, I'm always amazed. You know, go back to the 11th century, and this is exactly what was happening then, and was one of the big reasons for the schism between the East and West, because the Pope wanted all power in Rome, and the Greek speakers said, no, you can't have that. We are not going to follow and do exactly what Rome does. So, you know, there's lots of things in history that tells us that this is not a unique situation, but I really do hope very much that our Australian bishops listen to us.
Hal Ranger, you optimistic about the approach being taken by Peter and others?
Oh, you've got to be optimistic. I'd be very hopeful, and I certainly want to, everything that Angela said, I would support it, and I would hope that the bishops of Australia, and I happen to know most of them personally, I just hope that they allow their heart and are free from anyone looking over their shoulder, because I think they'd be very sympathetic, the vast majority, to everything that's in that letter. Now, something else happens when the corporation gets together, but individually, I think that's something that they'd be very sympathetic and supportive of. So I hope that they allow their hearts to really come to the surface here.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. Time to take your calls. We'll get through as many as we can. First to Margaret in Sydney. Hello, Margaret. What would you like to say?
Good evening. Look, I would just like to make some points. I couldn't believe it when I heard this discussion of a synod came up, because I wrote to a bishop yesterday. I'm not in the habit of doing that, asking if they'd consider such a thing. Of course, I haven't heard a reply yet. I may never get a reply. But the other thing I'd like to say, I've been a practicing Catholic all my life, really seriously involved in the church since my young days. I'm now retired. I was a professional person. And the points I'd like to make that have really distressed me and have really made me feel my faith is shaken in the institutional church, not so much in God. And these are the points. The terrible crimes of sexual abuse that seem to have been rife throughout the Catholic world were so badly handled, and I don't think I need to go into that because everybody now knows. And I think the very poor management by the bishops was just a terrible condemnation. It almost said to me they didn't understand the issue. The other thing, Vatican II seems to be wound right back, and we seem to be living in a church that's fairly oppressed at the moment. And I know that the bishops may feel they listen, but I don't think they do. And those bishops who do listen seem to be sidelined. And I'd especially like to mention Bishop Geoffrey Robinson, whom I think is a towering Episcopal man in this country, and the work he did for sexual abuse, and I think his treatment was a national disgrace. And the other person I'd like to say, I don't know him, but I know him by repute, is the terrible way that Bishop Morris's situation was handled. And the other bishop, whom I don't know personally, but I admire enormously, is Bishop Patrick Power. He does seem to listen to people. There's a lot more I could say, but I'm sure you've got my drift.
Margaret, I think we have, and I don't think there's any need to advance any further comment on that.
Right.
We'll allow it to stand.
Sure.
Margaret, thanks.
Thank
for your
you.
Call. Let's go to Elizabeth in Sydney. Hello, Elizabeth. Welcome to you. What would you like to say?
Good evening. I see that there's many problems, and I've listened to the many points tonight, and they've so many of them are very important, valid points. I also am concerned that there's a central point of problem with the church of honesty. And I think people react very badly where they smell something as being dishonest. And I think that the church, it's of concern to me, not only are we seeing within it such disturbing things have already been mentioned, but it's how much is it there to people both in the church and out of the church. And I'm very mindful of this, that in Australia we have a church, a Catholic church, that's a corporation. It, you know, like I think a significant part of it anyway is, not everybody of course, but a significant part. It's a corporation which runs schools. Now, I know before you mentioned, you sort of, I think, was a bit dismissive about someone referring to about the school problem. In our parish, we have a school, the local primary Catholic school, that is chock-a-block. They're banging at the doors to get into it. We have in our parish, if you do not have someone in every seat at each of the three masses. You know, there's just... Now, I'm not just saying it's numbers, because also I'm aware that I don't have a right, neither does anyone else, to judge and say, oh, aren't I better? You know, I'm there at Mass. But what are we doing? What is happening? Why is it that people... I think it's dishonest. They don't want anything to do with the church. And then they say, oh, but we want to send our kids to the Catholic school when we have kids.
Well, surely that... I'll get Peter Johnson to comment on that. It's an interesting sign, isn't it, Peter, when the secular world is saying, look, we recognise something in the values of the church, yet... And you get non-Catholics wanting to send their kids to Catholic schools, yet inside the church there's this terrible turbulence, as was reflected in those observations, about there's a sort of some pervasive sense of dishonesty or disingenuousness.
Yeah, the honesty point is one that I think goes to the heart of this, John. Can I just say, as far as the Catholic schools are concerned, I think, in fact, Catholic schools have to be very careful that the state schools don't become a real competitor in the area of values. There's a lot of really good things going on in state education at present, and I think the church has to say, well, what is the product that we're offering here when so many young people aren't, in fact, staying in the church? So is Catholic education itself being successful? But as I say, values are something that I think increasingly are important in society generally. But on the issue of honesty in the Catholic Church, I think it's fair to say that the Catholic Church as an organisation, as Elizabeth says, as a corporation, does have a cultural problem. And any leader of a corporate organisation these days will assure you that the most important thing they do in managing that organisation is look to the culture of the organisation in ensuring that they can be confident that decisions throughout the organisation are taken in a way consistent with the values of the organisation. Well, I very regretfully have to say that I do not see that in the Catholic Church. I think, in fact, Bishop Geoffrey Robinson was mentioned. I think in his book he gave plenty of evidence of a lack of a good culture, of a culture that was too much driven by the preservation and protection of power in the institution and power and positions in the institution. Now, I want to add that something Hal said seemed very reasonable to me. I think that there are a lot of good bishops in the Australian Church. I don't know them all personally at all. I know a couple of them at best, but what I hear about them is that these are mostly good people trying to survive in an organisation which has a quite oppressive power culture. It's very difficult to do something about your own decision-making in an organisation of that nature, and I would hope that this open letter gives the bishops an opportunity to address that, and the synods are critical to that.
Let's go to Peter in Yass. Hello, Peter. Welcome to you. What would you like to say?
Yeah, good evening, John, and your guests as well. John, from being an ex-seminary student, I went in about 75 and bailed out in 77, and I had a look at it a few years previously about going back and decided no. Look, the way I look at it is that pretty simple way. Pope John the 23rd, he was an old man when he came in, and unfortunately he wasn't able to be there long enough to bring the Vatican Council to fruition. His successor, Paul the VI, although, you know, obviously a good pope, or a good man anyway, wasn't strong enough to bring it to its fruition. And John Paul I, who a lot of people forget about, started off with a promising pontificate but didn't last long enough. And he definitely was a man of Vatican II. And I think it's got to come from the top. But the top men, as in, back to John the 23rd again, they were the ones that, he was the man that was all about letting the fresh air in, you know, bringing in the collegiality between the bishops and working with his bishops.
Well, let us pick up on that, because there's an interesting point there, and this is the point about the nature of the popes. We had three popes, John the 23rd, Paul the VI, and then John Paul the I, albeit briefly, who reflected a more Western European tradition. Others say that what happened with John Paul the II and now with Benedict the XVI is they reflect a more conservative view, a more traditionalist view that's come out essentially of the Eastern part of the Western Church, the Middle European view of the Church. Do you think there's anything in that cultural argument, Angela McCarthy?
I certainly do, and this might be awkward in some people's minds, but I personally would really like to see a non-European pope. I don't know how possible that is, and I'll leave it totally to the Holy Spirit anyway, but the Eurocentric nature of the Roman Catholic Church is, I think, part of that whole bind up with the issues of power. We've had wonderful, wonderful men. John 23rd, of course, shocked the whole of Christendom with what he did. But I really don't think it's going to fully what was instituted with the Second Vatican Council. I don't think it comes into full fruition for 100 years. We've had almost 50 years where we're in a reactionary phase. I would see another 50 years, and the Holy Spirit will bring all of that to fruition.
Long-term optimism shining through there.
Yeah, well, you can't get away from it. Yeah. Not just up to us. Yeah. It's wider and bigger than that.
Hal Ranger, your view on that European sensibility, the differences?
I'd never thought of the present Pope Benedict as being sort of an Eastern European. I think he's coming out of Germany, out of Bavaria. He's out of...
But it's a very deep and solidly conservative Catholic tradition there in Bavaria,
yet,
isn't it?
35 years ago, 40 years ago, he was one of the more liberal advisors and participants in the Vatican Council.
Right.
You know, I think there's a culture in Rome, and maybe that's not quite the right word, but there is a the desire to dominate, to rule, to exert power, and I think there might be an element even of panic in that, that all over the world now there are people who can read, who are much more familiar with the scriptures, much more in touch with, I think, the spirit of God, and they panic a bit about that.
I must maintain this rigid position or all is lost, as the cliche
exactly.
goes.
I think so. Mm.
There's a sense of that, isn't there?
I think there is.
Yes. Peter.
John, could I suggest it's possibly more a question of the courier, of the bureaucracy within Rome?
Yeah.
I'd suggest that it'd be harder for a pope to turn around the advice received from the bureaucracy than from any elected government, say, in Australia, to turn around its bureaucracy. Yes. And that's always an issue with changes of government, and public services are pretty good these days at adapting. But I'd say the policy of the church for a long time has been largely in the control of the bureaucracy. And wherever the Pope came from, and I'm attracted somewhat to Angela's idea, but I'd say wherever the Pope came from, the main thing is that we need a Pope who is prepared to give leadership and who is prepared to take advice more broadly than from the curia located in Rome. And that's where the notion of subsidiarity, of synods, of listening to the people of the church throughout the world becomes so important to the future of the church.
Let's take a call from Chris in St Albans. Hello, Chris.
Hello, John. John, look, I'm a bit younger than these people. I'm sure I am. I'm 43. And 20 years ago or more, I was rejecting the baby boomer view of the church, and I'm still rejecting it now.
What do you mean by that?
Well, they're the people who take it upon themselves to speak for the whole church community when they have no mandate to do so. The fact is, it was their generation walking out on the church and failing to provide proper religious instruction and leaving my, you know, peers in all manner of strife with broken marriages and trying to navigate their way, when, in fact, I see today healthier numbers in the seminaries than ever before, a church more responsive to younger people, a church that's put the guitars away and got real about what the Catholic Church is about, and being proud to be Catholic, daring to practice Catholicism, not pandering to some kind of return to Protestant ideas of the Reformation. We're a free country. We came out of a terrible experience in Ireland. We're exercising our freedom to practice Catholicism. Going to Mass is striking a blow for freedom.
Peter Johnson, I've got to cut you there, yes. Chris, because we need time. We've only got 3 minutes left. So, Peter, your response to what Chris has had to say.
John, ultimately, this is a matter of faith. Anyone who's concerned about the future of the church has to ask themselves in their hearts what, in fact, God wants of us, because that's why we're in this business. We're not a member of a club that's conducted its business in a certain way. We are people of faith and belief, and we expect the church, in fact, to live that belief, and we expect it to be Christ-like. I can respect John's point of view, but all I can say is I'd ask him to look very carefully at what we've put in that open letter. They are facts, and they are facts upon which any Catholic must be concerned for the future of their church.
Let me pick up a little on what a couple of the things Chris has said, because I think there is a sensibility, and you pick it up in some of our conservative columnists who have come out of a Catholic tradition, people like Angela Shanahan or Piers Ackerman, and who are writing in our national newspapers, that generally reflect a concern that the church lost the plot at some point, and it lost the plot at the values question, and the values question is linked back to that older sensibility, even to the Latin Mass, in the sense that the Latin Mass represented an understanding of history. It retained something of the integrity of the faith through 2,000 years of time, and it was a rich intellectual, cultural, liturgical understanding that has been trashed, and that was trashed also in the music of the church. So in some senses, in Vatican II, the church lost something of its essence, and there is a sort of grief there that's almost palpable.
Yeah. Well, I guess that happens in every area of change, in every aspect of everything you do in the world, and that's the argument for tradition. Tradition is a safe course, usually, but there comes a time when you must have change if, in fact, that tradition is failing to establish the aims. And that's where we've got to ask the question, is the church Christ-like at present?
But
and all those things, Latin masses and so on, are simply means and are not do not matter in themselves.
Just briefly, I'll get you to comment on that too, Hal Ranger. Is there some real sense of grief there among many sort of generally widely held and felt conservative people?
John, I find in a daily experience, and I'm talking about yesterday, I spent quality time with three young couples. They're all in their early mid-20s who'll be married over the next few months. They are not pining for Latin Mass. They're not pining for a highly structured, they're pining and screaming out for the compassion, the understanding, the forgiveness of Jesus. That's what they're looking for. And it's only when they authentically, I think, receive that, that they will come to believe passionately and fall in love with our God as their God loves them.
Hal Ranger, thank you for your comments. Peter Johnston, thank you for being with us. Angela McCarthy is going to be around later in the evening if you want to stick around, folks, and join us for our discussion later on in the chat room. We've run out of time right now, so hold your questions. Those of you who are on the line, apologies for not getting through to all of you, but we will be back with this discussion later in the program. And straight after the news, we're going to extend this conversation a little wider when we're joined by the editor-at-large of the National Catholic Reporter, Tom Roberts, in the United States. For now, thank you for your participation, Hal Ranger and Peter Johnston. You're on Sunday Night on